Chapter 6. I don't know how an object of art would feel, went on Blunt, in an unexpectedly grating voice, which, however, recovered its tone immediately. Don't know. But I do know that Rita herself was not a Danny, never, not at any time of her life. She didn't mind the holes in her stockings. She wouldn't mind holes in her stockings now. That is if she manages to keep any stockings at all, he added, with a sort of suppressed fury so funnily unexpected, that I would have burst into a laugh, if I hadn't been lost in astonishment of the simplest kind. No, really. There was a flash of interest from the quiet Mills. Yes, really, Blunt nodded and knitted his brows very devilishly indeed. He may yet be left without a single pair of stockings. The world's a thief, declared Mills, with the utmost composure. It wouldn't mind robbing a lonely traveler. He is so subtle. Blunt remembered my existence for the purpose of that remark, and as usual it made me very uncomfortable. Perfectly true. A lonely traveler. They are all in the scramble from the lowest to the highest. Heavens! What a gang! There was even an archbishop in it. Faust Placentus, said Mills, but without any marked show of incredulity. I joke very seldom, Blunt protested earnestly. That's why I haven't mentioned His Majesty whom God preserve. That would have been an exaggeration. However, the end is not yet. We were talking about the beginning. I have heard that some dealers in fine objects, quite mercenary people of course, my mother has an experience in that world, show sometimes an astonishing reluctance to part with some specimens, even at a good price. It must be very funny. It's just possible that the uncle and the aunt have been rolling in tears on the floor, amongst their oranges, or beating their heads against the walls from rage and despair. But I doubt it. And in any case, Alliger is not the sort of person that gets into any vulgar trouble. And it's just possible that those people stood open-mouthed at all that magnificence. They weren't poor, you know, therefore it wasn't incumbent on them to be honest. They are still there in the old respectable warehouse, I understand. They have kept their position in their quartier, I believe. But they didn't keep their niece. It might have been an act of sacrifice. For I seem to remember hearing that after attending for a while some school round the corner the child had been set to keep the books of that orange business. However it might have been, the first fact in Rita's and Alliger's common history is a journey to Italy, and then to Corsica. You know Alliger had a house in Corsica somewhere. As he has it now as he has everything he ever had. And that Corsican palace is the portion that will stick the longest to Dona Rita, I imagine. Who would want to buy a place like that? I suppose nobody would take it for a gift. The fellow was having houses built all over the place. This very house where we are sitting belonged to him. Dona Rita has given it to her sister, I understand. Or at any rate the sister runs it. She is my landlady. Dot, her sister here. I exclaimed. Her sister. Blunt turned to me politely, but only for a long mute gaze. His eyes were in deep shadow, and it struck me for the first time then that there was something fatal in that man's aspect as soon as he fell silent. I think the effect was purely physical, but in consequence whatever he said seemed inadequate, and as if produced by a commonplace, if uneasy, soul. Dona Rita brought her down from her mountains on purpose. She is asleep somewhere in this house, in one of the vacant rooms. She lets them, you know, at extortionate prices, that is, if people will pay them, for she is easily intimidated. You see, she has never seen such an enormous town before in her life, nor yet so many strange people. She has been keeping house for the uncle priest in some mountain gorge for years and years. It's extraordinary he should have let her go. There is something mysterious there, some reason or other. It's either theology or family. The saintly uncle in his wild parish would know nothing of any other reasons. She wears a rosary at her waist. Directly she had seen some real money she developed a love of it. If you stay with me long enough, and I hope you will, I really can't sleep. You will see her going out to mass at 6:30. But there is nothing remarkable in her. Just a peasant woman of 34 or so. A rustic nun. Dot, I may as well say at once, that we didn't stay as long as that. It was not that morning that I saw for the first time Teresa of the Whispering Lips and Downcast Eyes slipping out to an early mass from the House of Iniquity into the early winter murk of the City of Perdition, in a world steeped in sin. No. It was not on that morning that I saw Dona Rita's incredible sister with her brown, dry face, her gliding motion, and her really nun-like dress, with a black handkerchief enfolding her head tightly, with the two pointed ends hanging down her back. Yes, nun-like enough. And yet not altogether. People would have turned round after her, if those dartings out to the 6:30 mass hadn't been the only occasion on which she ventured into the impious streets. She was frightened of the streets, but in a particular way, not as if of a danger, but as if of a contamination. Yet she didn't fly back to her mountains, because at bottom he had an indomitable character, a peasant tenacity of purpose, predatory instincts. No, we didn't remain long enough with Mr. Blunt, to see even as much as her back glide out of the house on her prayerful errand. She was prayerful. She was terrible. Her one-eyed peasant mind was as inaccessible as a closed iron safe. She was fatal. Dot, it's perfectly ridiculous to confess that they all seem fatal to me now, but writing to you like this in all sincerity, I don't mind appearing ridiculous. I suppose fatality must be expressed, embodied, like other forces of this earth. And if so, why not in such people as well as in other more glorious or more frightful figures? We remained, however, long enough to let Mr. Blunt's half-hidden acrimony develop itself, or prey on itself in further talk about the man Alliger and the girl Rita. Mr. Blunt, still addressing Mills with that story, passed on to what he called the second act, the disclosure, with what he called the characteristic Alliger impudence which surpassed the impudence of kings, millionaires, or tramps, by many degrees the revelation of Rita's existence to the world at large. It wasn't a very large world, but then it was most choicely composed. How is one to describe it shortly? In a sentence, it was the world that rides in the morning in the voice. In something less than a year and a half from the time he found her sitting on a broken fragment of stonework buried in the grass of his wild garden, full of thrushes, starlings, and other innocent creatures of the air, he had given her amongst other accomplishments the art of sitting admirably on a horse, and directly they returned to Paris he took her out with him for their first morning ride. I leave you to judge of the sensation. Continued Mr. Blunt, with a faint grimace, as though the words had an acrid taste in his mouth. And the consternation, he added venomously. Any of those men on that great morning had some one of their womankind with them. But their hats had to go off all the same, especially the hats of the fellows who were under some sort of obligation to Alliger. You would be astonished to hear the names of people, of real personalities in the world, who, not to mince matters, owed money to Alliger. And I don't mean in the world of art only. In the first rout of the surprise, some story of an adopted daughter was said abroad hastily, I believe. You know, adopted with a peculiar accent on the word, and it was plausible enough. I have been told that at that time she looked extremely youthful by his side, I mean extremely youthful in expression, in the eyes, in the smile. She must have been. Dot, Blunt pulled himself up short, but not so short as not to let the confused murmur of the word adorable reach our attentive ears. The heavy Mills made a slight movement in his chair. The effect on me was more inward, a strange emotion which left me perfectly still, and for the moment of silence Blunt looked more fatal than ever. I understand it didn't last very long, he addressed us politely again. And no wonder. The sort of talk she would have heard during that first springtime in Paris would have put an impress on a much less receptive personality. For of course Aliger didn't close his doors to his friends, and this new apparition was not of the sort to make them keep away. After that first morning she always had somebody to ride at her bridle hand. Old Doyen, the sculptor, was the first to approach them. At that age a man may venture on anything. He rides a strange animal like a circus horse. Rita had spotted him out of the corner of her eye as he passed them, putting up his enormous paw in a still more enormous glove, airily, you know, like this, Blunt waved his hand above his head, to Aliger. He passes on. All at once he wheels his fantastic animal round and comes trotting after them. With the merest casual bonjour, Aliger he ranges close to her on the other side and addresses her, hat in hand, in that booming voice of his like a deferential roar of the sea very far away. His articulation is not good, and the first words she really made out were I am an old sculptor. Dot dot of course there is that habit. Dot dot but I can see you through all that. Dot dot apostrophe, he put his hat on very much on one side. I am a great sculptor of women, apostrophe he declared. I gave up my life to them, poor unfortunate creatures, the most beautiful, the wealthiest, the most loved. Dot dot two generations of them. Dot dot just look at me full in the eyes, mon enfant. Apostrophe apostrophe, they stared at each other. Dona Rita confessed to me that the old fellow made her heart beat with such force that she couldn't manage to smile at him. And she saw his eyes run full of tears. He wiped them simply with the back of his hand, and went on booming faintly. Thought so. You are enough to make one cry. I thought my artist's life was finished, and here you come along from devil knows where with this young friend of mine, who isn't a bad smear of canvases, but it's marble and bronze that you want. Dot dot I shall finish my artist's life with your face, but I shall want a bit of those shoulders too. Dot dot you hear, Aliger, I must have a bit of her shoulders too. I can see through the cloth that they are divine. If they aren't divine I will eat my hat. Yes, I will do your head, and then nunc dimittis. Apostrophe apostrophe, these were the first words with which the world greeted her, or should I say civilization did. Already both her native mountains and the cavern of oranges belonged to a prehistoric age. Why don't you ask him to come this afternoon? Apostrophe apostrophe, Aliger's voice suggested gently. He knows the way to the house. Apostrophe, the old man said with extraordinary fervor, oh, yes I will, apostrophe pulled up his horse and they went on. She told me that she could feel her heartbeats for a long time. The remote power of that voice, those old eyes full of tears, that noble and ruined face, had affected her extraordinarily, she said. But perhaps what affected her was the shadow, the still living shadow of a great passion in the man's heart. Aliger remarked to her calmly. He has been a little mad all his life. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.